It's December. It's January. January 29th, and this is the 37th episode of the Agriculture Show. And we'll start our show with a song, and we'll be right back.
See you, Jeff. Have a good show.
Alligators, yeah. Hold me steady, I am ready. With all that meat and no potatoes, I don't think that peas are bad. With me, most anything goes. I look in the pot, I'm fit to fight. 'Cause woman, you know that mess ain't right. All that meat and no potatoes just ain't right, like green tomatoes. Yes, I'm steaming, I'm really screaming. All that meat and no potatoes. My fine hamburger, why is it?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Steger, and hi, Barkley. Good to see you out again.
Good afternoon, Jeff.
So we had a guest today, and as befitting the season, I got a call last night that he has the flu. So we'll look forward to that another time, and it'd be a great show, and it will be a great show. And so, Barkley, you and I will carry on here, and I'll pick out some more songs and the like. And so I actually scratched on a piece of paper just a few topics that came across my desk this week, and we'll put that in part of the show, and we'll hopefully, I hope you have a bunch of stuff that you've noticed this week, or you can scratch something down, topics that struck your interest and curiosity. So with that, we'll start our show with some more, another tune, and what you heard there was All That Meat and No Potatoes by Fats Waller, and we'll play another couple tunes, and we'll be right back. Hang in there, folks. Kind of a beautiful day. I don't know, Barkley, how do you like this kind of weather? It's doesn't know if it's going to be cold or wet or what.
Well, last week, I remember, I didn't take my jacket off. It was so cold in here.
Yeah,
that's right. It feels about 10 degrees different right now.
Oh, I know. And so, who knows what next week will bring. Boy, the winter's really plugging right along here, isn't it? You know, it's already, February's definitely a winter month, but by March, we can look forward to maybe some bit longer breaks and mild weather. So,
well, the days are starting to get longer, too, little by little. You get a little more sunlight coming out and brightening the day, but it's still pretty dark when you leave home for work and get back home for dinner.
I know. But it's getting longer, and I notice it, and I feel great as that great singer, what's that guy? He's that great song, says, do-do-do-do-do-do-do, I feel good, and do-do-do-do-do. I'll give up right now. I'm going to play, let someone sing who's professional. We'll be back shortly, folks.
An apple pan dowdy makes your eyes light up. You come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy makes the sun come out when heavens are cloudy. Shoe fly pie, an apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Mama, when you bake, Mama, I don't want cake. Mama, for my sake, I'm going to the oven to make some ever-loving shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy makes your eyes light up. You come and say a howdy, shoe fly pie. An apple pan dowdy, I'll never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Give your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. Do the larger service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H
for community and country.
4-H
respond to food security.
4-H
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
We're back, and welcome aboard, folks. It's the Agriculture Show, episode number 37, here on January the 29th. And today, we're going to do a little bit of back and forth between Barkley and I and a few songs. And I've asked Barkley to put together a few topics he's interested in, and I've got a few that I scratched down from this week. And I'll just maybe start here first, Barkley. So I saw in the news this week, a lot of stories about an OMB decision regarding the expansion of the Kitchener-Waterloo urban areas. And so basically the background is that the region proposed a more of a hard countryside line, limitations on how many acres can go into greenfield development, and inconsistent with the goals of the Places to Grow Act that the province of Ontario enacted a few years ago. And, wow, there's been a pile of stuff in the paper about that, pro and con. The decision was, I guess, arguably against the region's planning department. But in the scheme of things, of course, none of these things is hard and fast, and there's still negotiations going on. I guess I noticed that there's interest in the Kitchener paper, a few articles, also on some email lists. So just to review to our listeners, and adjust the Provincial Planning Act suggests that for the proposed population increase and housing needs for the next 30 years, that 40% of that growth happen on greenfields and 60% within present city limits. That's intensification. And basically how they go about doing that, they say, well, what kind of homes do we need? And there's two or three, actually. There's way more. I'm just trying to short form it a bit. But essentially, it's single-family dwellings versus intensification. Traditionally, single-family dwelling is very desirable. Most people see that as where they have their starter home, where they bring up their family in a subdivision, in a single-family dwelling. But if we don't have, so the change has been, of course, that with this baby boomers come along, the odds are that they will not keep their single-family dwellings, and all kinds of single-family dwellings will become available as those baby boomers head to condominiums and closer services. And so we'll have a whole bunch of single-family dwellings available for the that young people coming up. The counter-argument is, of course, that we know that a lot of, for taking care of seniors, there's a good argument that, you know, they'd be better off staying in their homes rather than putting in institutions. So arguably, they will keep their homes, and it's probably a better use of funds that they be looked after as long as they can in their own homes. So both sides have put together various formulas about how much they need and so on. And so to give you some numbers, I think regional planners suggested as little as only 80 hectares needed for growth in the next planning horizon, and the development industry suggesting 1,000 hectares. Quite a gap. have you been looking at this sort of stuff at all, Barclay? Any things come to mind when we talk about what would you like to, as a young person, where would you see yourself living in time?
Well, it really depends. Like, I know kind of when you're starting out, you know, you're focused on your career, you're still having, you know, large social life. Your mm-hmm. friends haven't started other families and having to focus on all that. So an apartment makes sense. You know, it's something you start. You don't have property really to take care of. You can come and go as you wish. You know, but you do want, you know, when you get a little older, you want that space, whether that's, you know, a garage with a driveway, you know, a yard to putter around in, you know, something to call your own, something to be creative with. And as you get a little older and you get more kids, you want them to either have their own playground in the backyard or have a playground in that neighborhood as a park.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a development on where you are within your life and how much, you know, you can handle socioeconomically.
So I guess it's going to be have to, over time, we'll have to decide how this is going to play out. But, I mean, the good news is that there is some consideration that we ought to be limiting. We can't have unlimited growth onto greenfields, but we don't know what that level is yet, and that'll be ongoing negotiations.
Well, if I can just add to that, Jeff, once you pave on farmland, you're taking that land permanently out of food production.
True.
That land's never coming back. I've heard it said many a times that 2/3 of the best land in Canada you can see from the top of the CN Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of that right now on a clear day can you see that's still an agricultural production helping feed people?
Mm-hmm.
Very little. And that land can never be taken back. All the pavement and the oils and other chemicals that are now sitting on top of that, even if you strip that all bare, that topsoil is forever affected. You can never take that back. And that is some of the best farmland in Canada, not just Ontario.
Yeah, good point. It's not really a reversible situation. When not like you can change zoning from residential to commercial and back to residential. It's a one-way trip. Now, you know, so we all have our lives. Here's the other, our counter-argument in a sense, too, that, you know, we only have our 80 to 90 years on this planet, and so... you know, if it, for a satisfying life, there are a large number of people see a single family dwelling as that is the good life for them. It's how do you get, this is an honest, heartfelt feeling amongst people. And how do you tell people that, you know, for the good of whatever, you can't do that? Like, it's the immediacy of your needs and wants. How do you subjugate them to arguably what is the longer term best thing to do? Like, you know, like I say, Barclay, you know what, you should quit eating those darn things because they're going to kill you, but you still want to eat those things, whatever it might be. Or you want to have a car that has 500 horsepower. Well, you're going to kill yourself, but I still want the 500 horsepower. It's your expectations. And so single family dwelling, how do we make it more normal or sexy to have non-family, like non-single family dwellings as a preferred choice amongst all people, like young couples we're talking about?
Well, there's several ways of looking at it. One is perhaps putting more value on farmland. And perhaps when you take that out of production permanently for a development, there's a tax on that. And that tax goes to paying to help preserve farmland or environmentally sensitive areas like marshes and wildlife refuges. The other way of looking at it is, well, as soon as you move away from where the population and the services and commerce is more dense, you're needing a vehicle to get around. And that's, it used to be, if you live downtown, say, I find it quite interesting, whether it's London, England, or Toronto, where a lot of the services, the doctors, the dentists, a lot of the commerce, clothing, groceries, they're all within walking distance.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas as soon as you get out to, you know, let's call the development area suburbs, you need a vehicle to get around. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you want to pick up a pizza. It's, you know, probably half a kilometer away from where you're getting your groceries, from where you're getting your shoes, from where you're getting your airplane tickets for your vacation. Hence, giant stores such as Walmart, Zellers, Canadian Tire, and all the things they expand into become more popular for those people that have to drive.
Mm-hmm.
But you're really dependent on a car, you're really dependent on the streets and the roads being clear. And I know there was a big exodus from a lot of the cities as soon as the QEW 401, 403, 400 started being developed, and people could afford to drive into work and live, you know, in areas that were recently developed. And that provided, for some of them, great opportunity to live in the outdoors. Okay. I know Barrie especially grew because of that.
Well, we'll hear some more about it as time goes on, and hopefully I can get a guest in sometime. We'll talk about that. I know I put some feelers out to some local activists and so on to get their take on it, and I've asked them to interpret their what they believe in the interest of what would be good or bad for agriculture, which is the focus of our show here. Just another topic I noticed this week, the Ontario Liberals just elected a new leader. Her name's Kathleen Wynne, and she's a downtown Toronto MP. But it brings up an interesting sub-theme in this recent Liberal election, provincial election, Liberal leaders race, the Ontario Liberals don't have a good representation in the countryside like they used to, and how do they fix that? And she did something rather interesting, and she thought maybe she'd like to be the agriculture minister as well as premier for a short while. I thought, well, that's quite a novel thing to do. I suppose it's actually more appearance than anything, because I think, as most people are, it'd be a little vague what the heck the agriculture minister actually does in Ontario anymore. Do you would you be okay with the Kathleen Wynne also having a dual portfolio, that of a premier and agriculture minister?
Well, it has been done. There was a Premier of Saskatchewan who one time became Premier of, or Minister of Health as well.
No way. Who was that? Sorry, I know I'm putting you on the spot, but it's a great story. Really?
Great story. The name escapes me
right now. Okay, that's fine. But it's
the CBC biop of him they had last year really introduced me to him.
Okay.
Kiefer Sutherland's grandfather.
Wait, where's our guys from the previous show, the Fandom Show? They would know all these minutiae and odds and ends, wouldn't they?
As soon as I leave the show, I know I'm going to remember his name.
Yeah, for sure. That would also do.
But Kathleen Wynne, she has had exposure to agriculture. The Perth Federation of Agriculture and the Welton Federation of Agriculture used to host, with John Wilkinson, the former MPP of Stratford, Perth, Wellington, a introduction to agriculture for some of the Toronto MPPs called Ag 101.
I remember that.
Yeah. And in return, Kathleen Wynne and a few other of the Toronto MPPs would host John Wilkinson and some of the farm communities from North Wellington and Perth Stratford for Toronto 101.
Really? You are a wealth of information. That's cool.
And I remember when I was on a contract working for Ontario Federation of Agriculture back in 2010, we were at the Stratford Museum, and I had a job at that point when everyone was coming back from the farm tour of husking corn. And I was husking away corn, and Mrs. Wynne, or Kathleen Wynne came up to me and said, "Oh, you're husking corn. Oh, I used to do this when I was a kid. Can I join you?" I go, "Sure." Next thing I know, she's husking corn beside me, and the other Toronto MPPs come up, and, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm husking corn." "You're what?" I'm taking the green covering off a corn cob." "Oh, is it hard?" "No, you can do it." So next thing I know, a couple other MPPs are picking up corn cobs and husking it too. Then along comes a whole lot of cameras, and I hear, you know, everyone smile, click, click, click. Then I kind of got brushed to the side just so they could have their photo op with the corn without me. So she has a bit of an understanding that way and appreciation, you know, so she knows where food is, and she knows what John Wilkinson was trying to do in educating the food doesn't come from the grocery store. It comes from the producers, the primary producers. So do you need a background in the ministry you're running, and how much of a background do you need? That's another question we ask. I think it's very interesting that she did say earlier on in her debates with the other five delegates for head of the Liberal Party that she would take on the Minister of Agriculture role if she became Premier. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people with bated breath to see how that turns out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just a curious thing. I never would have thought but that just shows that they do want to have to win the province. You need to win all the areas. You can't just do it on either urban or rural or whatever crazy thing is going on at the time. So, good luck for her in that. It's good to see agriculture mentioned, and of course that's the gist of our show here. The agriculture show is to bring news of agriculture to our urban listeners. So. The only one last thing I wanted to mention here in this part of the show was tell everyone that tonight there is a movie that they can watch. It's a freebie, and this is at the Kitchener Public Library up on Fisher Hallman there at the high school, and it's titled The Food Machine. Now, this is part of the ongoing series from the Waterloo Region Food Systems Roundtable Group. And this one was, I believe, originally aired in the States a few years back, part of a documentary. Good news. Well, I'm going to go up tonight. It's part of the advertising for this particular show. They actually linked to the online movie. You can look at it ahead of time. And so I did. And after tonight's showing, then there will be a short question period, and I'm looking forward to that. I just have a few things I wanted to bring up when I was there. And so that's tonight at the Kitchener Public Library at the high school on Fisher Hallman, and it's the title is called The Food Machine. We had Mark Zerb on our show not too long ago, and he is also part of that Ward Region's food systems. In that, probably he's probably the ones that got started, and in his job with the regional public health department. So, I think Mark Reese is coming up tonight too, if he can get away from his work, and it should be an interesting evening. So that's little bits and odds and ends that I've heard and seen this week. And Barkley, hope you have a few topics that caught your attention this last week, and we can talk to them after the next break. And if that's good with everybody here at the table, and that's you and I sitting here, then I'll play another tune. Once again, tell you this is the episode 37 of the Agriculture Show on January 29th. It's your host, Jeff Stager, and with me today as co-host is Barkley Knapp. All right, we'll see you on the other side of these songs.
I like pie, I like cake, I like anything you bake. I like your crackers too, crumbled up in chicken stew. When I see your jelly roll, then I lose my self-control. But of all these things, I like you best of all, yeah.
Listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Well, we're back, folks, and welcome to our second half of our show today. It's your host, Jeff Stager, and with me is Barkley Knapp. And so we've just been going over some of the headlines and interesting things we've seen this last week in the paper, and I actually did find some more about the OMB decision, an editorial in today's paper. Get some more records, so maybe I'll get to that later. But I would like to ask Barkley now what if he could pass along some of the interesting things he's seen this week, what he's involved with, what strikes his fancy. I hope I don't put you on the spot too much here, Barkley, but it's really no one listening to me just speaking all day. That'd be pretty awful.
Well, looking at my calendar, Jeff, yep. This weekend is the 32nd annual Guelph Organic Conference at the University of Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
Actually starts January 31st, so this Thursday, and goes through to Sunday. looks like on the 31st there is going to be more or less an introduction to organic orchard growing. Then on Friday, the format basically goes to A or B session, so a seminar for half a day in the morning and half a day in the afternoon. In the morning, you either have pollinating the world and saving the bees, or discovering the organic networks. What is the way forward for them? And it looks like in the afternoon, seminars are permaculture, a forum on what it is, and National GMO Impact Symposium and Action Plan. And then later on, you get to the jigsaw workshop portion of the organic conference, where every hour to every half hour and a half, there is a different topic in about seven different classrooms, it looks like, over the Saturday and the Sunday, covering different topics in regards to organic production and organic management of the food network system. So a lot of it's a lot of education. A lot of people are new to organic. They learn about it a lot. You know, they have it at the University of Guelph because there is a lot of research going on in regards to food science, food production, and there is a number of students that this, suddenly they're exposed to different choices in their life. University is great for that. And they can learn more about it, and they don't have to leave campus. So that's something that's on my calendar. Another interesting note, looking outside of Kitchener-Waterloo to the community south in the amalgamated, or the new city of Hamilton, formerly the region of Hamilton-Wentworth, the agriculture community there has an award they give out to the top rural citizen each year. It's named after a fellow who was very active in the community but was killed in a farming accident after being kicked in the spleen by a cow. And each year this group gets together, mostly the fair boards and the Junior Farmer Club down there, and decide on who's been most deserving over their lifetime that in regards to volunteering for the agriculture and rural community. Rural communities very much depend on their volunteers, whether you're sitting on the fair board. There's three fair boards down there. I think there's about three fair boards in Waterloo region as well. Sitting on a commodity board, sitting on an agricultural board, or a lot of churches and rural schools need volunteers as well. So rural volunteers are quite important in rural communities. That's how a lot of the work gets done. You can't just hire someone and expect them to, you know, to get it done within the budgets. Sometimes you don't have a budget for it. So that's something that I always find very interesting, because you always want to reward those people that put a lot into the community and help make the community as best as it can be. And also we have the Toronto Farm Show coming up in 2 weeks, and the International Center just outside of Dixon Road, I believe, by the airport. And that's always exciting to go see the different trade shows, and whether it's seed companies trying to get everyone to, you know, fill what they need for their what they're going to plant in the next couple of months, or the implement and tractor dealers. Machinery does break down. You want to know what's coming up. GPS technology has greatly taken over a lot of tractors, and some tractors even have some computer programs called AutoSteer. Of course, that depends on GPS and satellite technology too. To be more productive, farmers have to, you know, greatly get involved with technology, and there's been a lot of technology added to farm machinery and tractors and implements, and that's greatly helps, you know, farmers in knowing which part of their soil needs more fertilizer to it, more work to it, where they've planted, because you can't always see where you've planted. The ground's all worked up. And just so you don't have any bare space when that wheat or soybeans or corn comes up, or you don't have two rows side by side. Every row has to be spaced out just for the conditions for each plant, just so that every plant has minimal requirements they have for space and not fighting for all the resources that they need as plants.
Yeah, Well, that's a good little list of upcoming events, and thanks so much for that, Barclay. We often forget to, we certainly, if we had the time and people, we'd certainly like to do a more fuller list of what's available in the region and what kind of interesting activities for farmers to attend, and our city people too. And so I know as part of downsizing, the Ministry of Agriculture and Food no longer publishes their schedule that used to come out, I think, once a month or every 2 months, and they would list all the stuff that was happening in this zone, which was Waterloo, Wellington, and
Dufferin.
Hey. Yeah. That's right. So, you know, I think it sure would be nice to be able to have that regular part of it. And thanks for bringing along that news of what's going on. It's good stuff. Do you want to mention which ones you're going to do? Which ones you're interested in seeing, or why you want to see those things?
Well, it's always best to try to educate yourself. The Guelph Organic Conference, I don't grow organically, but I do garden organic matter, and it's always good to hear what the different techniques are coming up, especially in weed control. If you understand weeds, they come back like zombies. They don't care.
Zombie weeds.
They don't care. They're not wanted. They're just there to fight for resources and outfight basically a lot of your plants, and those plants could be your livelihood. And there's several ways of getting rid of them, but you know, the most economical way for farmers and the fastest way is usually, you know, a herbicide. But you know, if you want to pull them by hand like used to be done back in the 20s and 30s, that can be done. Just a lot more inefficient, let's say, for looking at it for a manufacturing kind of standpoint, if you want to use that kind of wording. It's great to know what's going on there. It's great to see an interest in food. It always surprises me the people that this is maybe the first or second conference, but the conference is well put together. I love the trade shows too. I've been looking for different places to source my hot pepper seeds, and quite difficult because not every garden center or garden or seed catalog carries them all, and that's something that I'm getting into because I find I have a good thumb for that. The Hamilton Wentworth Rural Citizen of the Year, I've been going to that every year since I did start a junior farmer club down in Ancaster region there down in 2007. The community is great. The people are great. There's a massive city that has about 500,000 people there to 400,000 people that all have to eat and are all surrounded by Lake Ontario and prime agricultural land there. And it's great to see how everyone can coexist, and then the need for keeping rural and urban, you know, combined yet separate. The Toronto Farm Show, it's always great to go into Toronto and fight the traffic, and suddenly you're seeing farmers from all over Ontario. People you may know, salesmen, you know, that you've been connected with, somehow you've met them through life, and it's great to catch up. It's great to see what the new technologies are. Like I said, GPS, what they're finding the uses for GPS is keeps growing and growing. Plus, there's always new seed technologies that are coming out, or new ideas, such as the idea of using, you know, radishes for cover crops. Cover crop is basically a crop you put down into the soil once you've harvested, just to keep the erosion of the soil from happening during the winter time. So something such as radishes as a cover crop, or clover. The studies in that are pretty interesting to see, and it's pretty neat to hear what the seed companies have been doing to research that all. Topsoil is something that takes several thousand years to create, if I'm wrong, could be more, and that's something that we as farmers can't afford to lose.
It's a long time. I forget what it is. It's something like a tenth of an inch for 10,000 years. But I think it depends, of course, the parent material, but it does take a long time to create a true soil profile. Yeah.
No, it's great to learn. Farmers always have to learn. Technology changes. You have to get more efficient if you want to increase your bottom line and stay in the black. It is a business after all. It's not just love for labor. And that's something a lot of farmers realize. And it's great to learn and see what you can do to improve your business and to make food more efficient and more readily available.
Okay, well, thanks, Barclay, for bringing along some of your experiences for this week and how your what agriculture means and the issues you think are important. And so why don't we just take another little song break here, and we'll do our wrap-up in after the next song and a few things. So, folks, thanks for tuning in today so far. We're going to – it's your host, Jeff Steger, with Barclay Knapp is my co-host, and it's the Agriculture Show, and we'll be back shortly.
So good at singing as you highfalutin chaps. My voice it may be husky and a little loud perhaps, for I have been a plowing with a lazy team, you see, and they keep me pretty busy with my get up woe by gee. But if you'll pay attention, I have a thing to say about a great mistake you make and do it every day in dealing out your praises, and I want to tell you now. Often you forget the man who walks behind the plow. 'Tis very nice to go to school to learn to read and write. 'Tis nicer still to dress up fine and sport around at night. Your painting and your poetry may all be hard to beat, but tell me what you're gonna do for something good to eat. Are muddy, my clothing is too coarse. I make a good companion for the oxen or the horse. My face is red, my hands are rough, all that I will allow. Please don't be too quick to spurn the man behind the plow. I like your great inventions, and I'm glad you're getting smart. I like to hear your music, for it kind of cheers my heart. But that won't reach the stomach of a woman or a man. Please pay some attention to the kind of thing that can. So boys, don't be too anxious for to leave the good old barn. Your father's growing feeble, soon he'll need your youthful arm. If you're honest in your purpose, at your feet the world must bow. For the greatest of the great men is the man behind the plow.
This is Murray Zink. You're listening to the Agricultural Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Okay, folks, that's the last segment of our show today, and thanks for listening in. Sparkly and I, busy with behind the desk here, talking about farm stuff and a few songs. And for our last segment, we'll probably just go over a little bit of what we talked about already. And I got through my newspaper, and this is today's Kitchen Water Record. I just want to follow up on that story about the land zoning issue, whether we should have 1,000 acres of developable land in the region or 80. I guess it's hectares, 1,000 hectares or 80 hectares, somewhere in between. And I'll just read this editorial from the paper and kind of sums up some of the nuances of it. I do hope some folks are ready to point up the contradiction between the Ontario Municipal Board's plan for a sprawling future and those behind the $1 billion tram. Can the light rail transit system still be expected to bring development to the center of two towns affordably, while millions more are spent on servicing subdivisions? That the two camps can reach entirely opposite conclusions about future development, with no consideration for transportation in the municipal board's decision, means we are entirely at the mercy of developers and laws out of our pioneer period. It confirms the judgment of Mike Harcourt, former premier of BC, and promoter of sustainable cities, that the Ontario Municipal Board is a medieval abomination. And I could give credit properly where it's due here. This is George Barrett from Cambridge who wrote this to the Kitchener paper. So right in there is some of the little bits and pieces of the whole argument. And in this case, he's tied in with you either spend money on intensification in light rail transit, or you continue with spending that same money, just building more streets and some more streets in the subdivision. Interesting little twist on it. And then he throws it into the, he doesn't like the Ontario Municipal Board, and that's another whole show, but essentially in the scheme of things, the Municipal Board was to provide further interpretation of planning laws in place if the two parties who are discussing a planning decision can't come to agreement on what the present wording means. So the Municipal Board was struck to provide expert opinion and decision on a argument that should be unique and not covered by present planning law. So obviously George doesn't like the Municipal Board at all, but when it works, it's certainly better than it is what it is, folks. It works most of the time. So I just want to pass along then that, boy, keep tuned, folks, in the Kitchener Waterloo area, this is our listening area, that the discussions of how big our city will be tie in with a lot of other important things in our region, including the light rail transit, as George says here.
No, so. You look at London.
Yeah.
London quadrupled in size. When was that, back in the 70s?
Yeah.
Suddenly swallowing up entire townships pretty much all around it.
Yeah, I believe everything south of 401, that was a township of,
And suddenly that city, and it became mostly residential, some commercial, some industrial.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever traveled through London, it's a struggle.
Yeah, it's a disaster, isn't it?
I
hate to put it that way, but it's,
If you want to get from the 401 to the North End, give yourself an hour.
Yep.
It's just an urban sprawl that's just kind of taken over itself and happened without planning.
Mm-hmm.
Everything has to be considered, and transportation's one that London's really weak on.
Yeah, it's tough for London. It can happen. You know, you think of it. They just had the 401 going through. As the successive councils moved along, they reasonably said within my 4 years as a municipal councillor, we can add one more subdivision. What will it matter? We can just delay this. And now they've got to the point where it's impossible for them to put a transit, divided highway series like 401s or anything in that town, because they've just, it's just layered too deeply. They cannot find a, and that's the consequence. Now, Kitchener-Waterloo, they had a little different thing. They have the Consular Expressway, which, in hindsight, where would we be without that? We'd be worse than, especially with our streets going north, south, east, and west, and labeled every other direction. some growing pains in Cambridge as they try to incorporate three different downtowns into a core. But Hamilton, because they're at the, there already is a major expressway through and so on, they kind of gave themselves a little bit of breathing room because they do have that divided highways types of transportation.
Well, and they added in the Red Hill or Red Valley Parkway as well between the QE thing. and the link.
Yep.
And that's really well used as well, just the traffic going through there.
So that's the light rail transit. Who knows where that fits in the scheme of things? It's intensification. Mm-hmm. People here do know the value of good transportation. The example being the expressway. That's how you get around fast. This light rail transit is just to do it on a different scale, different way. Controversial. And as this writer in the paper pointed out, you shouldn't spend money on both, because neither one will work to your happiness. You'll always say, I spent too much on light rail, or I spent too much on subdivisions building more streets. It's good to pick one or the other. So, boy, I hope that works out. I'm sure it will.
And, unfortunately, politicians, municipal or federal or provincial, they're all looking at their 4 or 5 year terms.
Mm-hmm.
What can they do within the, and then for growing a, though any place in the region, you have to look at, the next 50, 30 years. How is this going to affect, the movement? How is this going of people? How is this going to affect the implementation of the manufacturing industry and the commercial industry?
We got to talk, what we should stop right now and talk about the core of our show is, how does this affect farmers? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that just shortly here, if it's okay with you. So one of the problems with having farms around cities is that you can never set roots, because the mindset is, well, the city will be here, don't do it. so you get this like almost this sterile zone of abandoned farms, no permanent landowners, you know, 5 miles up from city boundaries, because farm families who normally would have made a lifetime there have given up. They've said, this is no place to be, I've got to move out. And this is all around the big cities, this bomb blast area where agriculture is gone. There's no community. Because you can't put permanent structures up when you're beside a city, because you're just going to get bulldozed down and you're going to get all this money to do it. I would like to pass on to our listeners that part of the protocol or suggestions in the local plan was that if, in fact, we could fix the boundaries of the growth area for the Kitchener-Waterloo, then farms could reasonably say, yeah, I can make my life here. And, yeah, I'm close to the city. I can offer these services and make a living. And, yes, the school would stay open and all my church will stay open because the community feels secure. They will stay. And so I just want to pass along, and I hate to forget these important things. This is an agriculture show about the Waterloo region producers, and there is that argument in the farm community that, you know what, all things being equal, we're stronger if we know that we're going to be here for our, whether it's your traditional generation-to-generation passage of the farm, or whether you want to start a new farm, that, yeah, I can set roots here, and I have a reasonable expectation that I can do this without being... annexed, bought out, shoved off with no, and have to go someplace else to do what I think is important. Does this make sense, Barclay? I mean, I think the light rail transit is really an urban issue, but this is how it affects farms.
No, you pointed out something and put it in the words that I wish I had heard earlier, Jeff, basically about communities and putting down the roots and communities grow. Communities are multi-generational, and that's quite important, and that's something that rural communities have, and I think we just take that for granted, and you just put that into words, and I wish I heard that earlier, because that really has got me thinking now, Jeff. Not just, letting us do our own thing, but also raising our own families and having our sense of community, knowing our neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's a lot of people that in this area who probably don't know their neighbors and who probably only hear about their neighbors when there's a complaint about they're making too much noise filling the silo, or they're making too much smell while spreading the manure on the fields to put the nutrients back in the soil. And it is unfortunate.
Yeah, so part of the deal is, if a person knows, okay, you're in the farm area, these are normal sights and sounds of the farm thing. You don't have a lot as much. I mean, it's okay for one farm to complain against the other, and there's always rights and wrong ways to do things. But boy, it's sort of aggravating when you are doing what are described as normal farm practices, which of the there's definitions and rulings on, and someone who's not in that zoning thinks this is not right. So, we want to talk about, and I know the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture, we have been supportive of the light rail transit and intensification as a way to strengthen the rural community, that we aren't under this, this blast zone type thing that happens around cities, which even though the farms and fields are still there and the barns are crumbling, it looks like farm, but in fact those are not any longer farms in the sense that I think the most residents of Ontario would get. They're not a family raised in and living on that farm and making a living. They're tenant farmers, or the buildings have been bulldozed, or there's just a matter of time before they're turned into subdivisions. So, just to kind of finish it off, I mean, we got a kind of a good vibe going on at the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. It's been very pleased with its relationship with regional planners. They get it. And we know in other jurisdictions, and I just talked to a fellow Federation member today, and how there's such antagonism in other parts of the province between the farm population and whether it's urban planners or conservation authorities and so on. And just to toot our horn here in Waterloo Region, in general, we'd like to think we have a good working relationship with those authorities and decision-making bodies that influence our lifestyle. So, Yeah, so this always kind of, we want to bring it back to the agriculture thing, otherwise we don't want to be, it's just not, you know, people might not get it when we speak about supporting intensification. Anything come to mind there, Barclay, on your list of stuff? I know you've been scratching down ideas there. Do you want to?
Talking about the movie tonight that the library or the high school there up in Fisher Hallman, the food machine, actually, I hadn't heard of it, so I tried Googling it on my phone. Fortunately, it didn't come up. But reminds me of, maybe about 5-6 years ago, another food-based movie that was having public showings called Food Inc.
Food Inc., I saw that.
I actually have a copy I lent, and it never got back to me. But very interesting, the four different concepts of agriculture or food production that was followed in that, unfortunately, and had to classify them as one of the four. But there's a lot of education needed, and there's a lot of education that was done for that movie. And it's great to see that there is interest in where food comes from.
Yeah, you know, it's a double-edged sword. You know, like I as a farmer, and you're in agriculture too, you know, you look at what's in the paper and what people are saying about agriculture, and you think, where are they getting that from? Mm-hmm. We have a job to do here. But the good side of it is, what a great, at least we have a chance to talk about what we do for a change. I mean, we're coming from the defensive position, but still, up until now, until these topics came around, who would ever talk about the day-to-day stuff of farming? It's a funny thing. This is a real pain, but it's an opportunity at the same time. You know what I mean? Like,
it's people, breaking the ice for us.
Yeah. Breaking the ice. And personally, I still watch. I've seen Food Inc. And I know there's another one I saw with a friend of mine. And then I have actually watched this Food Machine online before now. And there's all kinds of things in there that are technically not quite right from from my perspective as a producer and what it takes to do that. And not to be put out by it. I mean, this is a good time. I just like to know how to get that message across to people.
Well, one of the things they don't cover in Food Inc. is how the food system's got to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't just happen overnight, and obviously there was science and there was feelings and theories behind each of the four different methods, but how did they get that way? And unfortunately, that wasn't presented to the viewers, and that would probably make a good movie within itself too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, that's so. It's a there's lots of work we can do here. You know, it'd be fun to have a little sub show of this, and it's the agricultural movie review crew. You know, and he does say, well, one of our members say, this is a movie that I saw about agriculture, and this is what I thought about it. And they just have a real hoot there, I think. But,
I once tried to put together a list of movies that had agriculture in them, just general movies. And unfortunately, Field of Dreams was one of the very few could come up with. And Pauly Shore's father-in-law, I think it was. Pauly Shore was in a movie where he somehow dates a girl from college and gets back to meet her parents, and they have a large operation in Iowa or Illinois, I believe it was. And it didn't quite portray agriculture as more than, how it was viewed in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Field of Dreams is probably the most popular movie that involves agriculture. But there's very few it could come up with.
You know, I have a feeling there's a new show in the offering here called the Agriculture Movie Show. I don't know if you can find a bunch of people who could talk about that. That'd be fun because, you could see the movie industry through a different prism, which is how does it relate to agriculture? Boy, that'd be a hoot. I wish I had like about three or four lives here, huh? Oh, Lordy. What do you do? So many
A League of Their Own with Gina Davis, the women's baseball team in World War II.
Okay.
It was based off of, I know, Gina Davis and her sisters were milking Guernseys or Jerseys in part of the movie when they were recruited to play ball.
I wonder how that came to be in that. Was it because this is during the war and these women were
recruited to play ball and professional women's ball team because there wasn't enough men to supply the entertainment
of
baseball.
Like
sports, yeah. And for some reason they put that in there as, whether they were, coming from very far from one end of the spectrum to be brought to another in the urban areas where they're toured around to play baseball for entertainment. I don't know quite how it fit in, but I think there's more prisons and prison cells and courts that are presented in movies than there are farms or fields or tractors.
Well, you know, to give proper justice to this movie thing, maybe we ought to have, like, you know, agriculture is portrayed by the cartoons. Like, what was Daffy Duck really saying about the world? Or Elmer Fudd? I think I'd have to have our previous radio show on here, the weekly fandom show, and that's their expertise. And I hope you have fun listening to those guys. They talk a little bit about you know, the latest and greatest in wrestling and software and all kinds of things. But I sure they could talk. I just have to ask him, Recipient, if he'd do a show on agriculture and comics to see what he...
They probably could come up with one, yeah.
Well, all right. So, folks, you know, we probably filled your head with enough stuff for today. I don't know, Barclay, you want to call it a wrap today? It's about 3:16 here.
Wrap it is.
Wrap it is? Okay. So we'll call it a week. And thanks once again to come up for Barclay. It's episode number 37 in this January 29th. Your host, Jeff Steger. It's the Agriculture Show. And we'll just play out a couple songs here, and we'll see you next week.
You got till it's gone. Hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, up, 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 up. Ooh, up, up, up.
Well, they took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charge the people $1.50 just to see them. You've got till it's gone. Hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, up, 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 up. Ooh, up, up, up.
Hey! Hey, farmer, farmer, put away your DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, but give me the birds and the bees. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? Hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, up, 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 up. Ooh, up, up, up.
Ooh. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam. Bam! And a big yellow taxi, he took away my old man. I said, don't it always seem to go? But you don't know what you've got till it's gone. Hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, up, up, up.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? Hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.
Ooh, up, 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 up.
I said, hey, paradise, put up a parking lot.